everybody. Happy Friday. Welcome to the Brady Quinn Football Show! Man, that's a lot of energy for a Friday. It's actually a Thursday as we're recording this. I'm Will Brinson. This is the Pick Six Podcast, the daily CBS Sports NFL podcast. Reminder, you can subscribe on iTunes, rate and review, and leave a review. We love reviews. We appreciate them. More importantly than any review, however, is that next week, Super Bowl week, you, listener of this podcast, go to CBSSportsHQ.com or CBSSports.com/live at noon Eastern every day, Monday through Friday, and watch the Pick Six Rundown on CBS Sports HQ. It's an hour-long live streaming breakdown with guests, interviews, fun chatter, et cetera, et cetera. I need your support. We need your support. Let's go make podcasts great again or something. Right, Brady Quinn?
Or something like that. Whatever catchphrase you want to use, go check it out. It's going to be a ton of fun. We're going to have some great access to a lot of athletes, a lot of guys floating around, you know, getting ready to do their appearances and promos, but also talking to Super Bowl, and you get to have a lot of fun. That's the bottom line.
Yeah, and there's actually an entire, like, I've seen the schedule for HQ, and I'm sure you have too, because you're a big part of it. It looks like it's going to be a blast. There's going to be a big set, a lot of cool stuff. So if you're listening to this and you like this podcast, then you will like what we're putting on the old internet television, and we need you to go check it out. Big numbers. Got to do big numbers, huge numbers, or just entertaining, whatever, either way.
Otherwise, we'll all get fired.
Yeah, that's
one
right.
Or the other. Otherwise, right. We'll all get fired. Maybe right. Not immediately, and maybe one by one. It's not going to be some huge mass group firing, but right. Yeah, otherwise, we're all screwed pretty much.
Okay, I played this game with John Breach earlier this week, but let's say we're up on the top of the Mercedes-Benz Superdome, and there's an unnamed CBS executive, and it's you, me, and an 8K camera. Who is the first person who's the first thing thrown off by the executive? Who is the last thing thrown off by the executive?
I don't even understand the question. First off, why are we even playing this game? What the hell is an 8K camera? I've never even heard of that. I've heard of like a 4K TV. Well, what is an 8K camera?
Well, you know what a 4K a 4K TV is badass, right?
Badass.
Well, what do you think? You think an 8K camera is half as badass or twice as badass?
Probably twice as good as TV, but I don't understand why we've got a camera that can shoot something in 8K, but we've got only TVs that can only show in 4K. Doesn't it seem like we're missing something there?
Yeah, the Super Bowl is being shot in 8K, and I don't know if you can get an 8K TV, but if you can, let's just say these 8K cameras are pretty valuable, pretty expensive.
Okay.
My guess is that I'm the first thing being thrown off, followed by you, followed by the 8K camera. But who knows? Maybe it's 8K camera.
To your point, the 8K camera is probably last. All right. That's probably the last thing to go. But yeah, you're definitely first. I don't even know if that's debatable.
Here's the thing though.
Here's the other thing is, like, is there, because there's an executive up there too, right?
Yes.
I mean, you think I'm going to let an executive throw me off? Like,
You and I could throw the exec off and then throw the camera on top of him and then just hang out on the top of the Superdome.
That would be a way better solution to this whole deal is we just end up still being friends and then we just get rid of the executive and get rid of the 8K camera.
I like it. Okay, have you?
Or even better, get rid of the executive, keep the camera. We'll go sell that somewhere and we'll just hang out. And we'll have a few beers with the additional money we made from selling the camera.
See, Brady, it was a trick question all along and you solved it. Way to go. Let's talk about some football instead of throwing each other off the Mercedes-Benz Superdome, which is, for whatever reason, a thing I have. Have you read the Seth Wickersham article on the Cleveland Browns that came out on Thursday morning? It's okay if you have it because it came out like 2 hours before we recorded this, and it's really long.
No, I have not. And there's a couple things I'm a little bit leery of. Seth Wickersham, he's a tremendous writer. Also the guy who pretty much predicted the demise of the New England Patriots like 2 or 3 years ago.
Whoops.
And all they've done is win one of two Super Bowls and have now a chance of winning two of the last two.
Yeah. Seth Wickersham, a.k.a. he is a really good writer, really good dude, but a.k.a. the guy who galvanized the Patriots for another couple Super Bowls.
basically helped motivate them and Tom Brady to continue to go back to the Super Bowls time and time again. But, yeah, no. the Patriots are falling apart. That's right. Yeah, they're definitely falling apart. There's all these infighting and everything else. They've got a lot of issues, apparently, even though they're just going to another Super Bowl once again.
All right. I haven't read the entire thing, but I just have to point this out because this is the most amazing thing ever. This is the equivalent of throwing an executive off the Superdome, or the Mercedes-Benz, dome, whatever it is. This is Wickersham I'm reading now. So according to people briefed on the meeting on October 29th, Haslam, that's Jimmy Haslam, the Browns owner, and general manager John Dorsey entered Jackson, that's Hugh Jackson's office and told him the team was going to move in a different direction. Jackson asked why he was being fired. "The team quit on you," Dorsey replied. At the time, 4 of the 8 Browns games had gone to overtime. "Get the F out of my office," Jackson replied. So it's like they went in to fire Hugh Jackson, and he told him to get the F out of his office. It's unbelievable. Like, the two people he directly reports to, they're like, "Hey, Hugh, you're fired." He's like, "Get the F out." I mean, that takes some brass stones to do that. And I just want to applaud Hugh Jackson for being just that amazing.
Can I ask this? Because supposedly, and I had heard, because back when they had hired John Dorsey and brought him on board, I had heard from a local beat writer who had on good authority that Hugh Jackson was a part of that process in helping to bring John Dorsey there. So it's crazy to think that the tides turned that quickly in Cleveland, where Hugh ended up losing out on having the support of ownership, which, again, this is an ownership group that supported him through one win in 2 seasons.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure how they had so much support for him or why they would even make him a part of the process and who the next general manager would be and then cut ties so quickly. It's like you might as well just fired him before the season even started, started fresh, started new, and not had to go through the hassle of everything they did with Hugh Jackson being fired and Todd Haley. But I do love the balls of Hugh Jackson to get out of his office for like the next 24 hours where it's technically probably still his.
Yeah, he's like, "Get out of my office." It's like, "You work for me. What do you mean? Get out of your office. Turn your key, Mara." But I think it does speak to like Jimmy Haslam's just neck deep involvement in the football process there, that he's willing to listen. And it's clear that when the Browns started being competitive with the roster that Dorsey put together, but also still losing games that they should have won, that Dorsey was able to get in Haslam's ear and be like, "Look, bro, I told you, Hugh Jackson's a clown. We can win with this roster. Let me pick the next coach," et cetera, et cetera. And now it's going to be Freddie Kitchens, and I'm excited for Freddie Kitchens. More recent news, though. What were your thoughts? And we'll have time to – I don't want to dive into the Super Bowl on a Friday because we'll have time to talk about that all next week.
Yeah.
What were your thoughts coming out of the championship games with respect to do we need – all right, first of all, should we change the overtime rules?
I don't think so. I mean, the hard thing is no matter how you go about doing it, you almost provide an advantage one way or another. So
sure.
Everyone wants to make the argument of each team should get to touch the football once, right? And so the counter to that is, okay, let's say each team does get to. And we all know in the case of a field goal, they've done away with the sudden death aspect where any score first wins. So if it's a field goal, they get the chance to then match, kind of play it out, right? If it's a touchdown, game's over. So people are like, "Oh, I'm upset about that. Like, wouldn't you love to see Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs get a chance to respond to the New England Patriots?" Well, yeah, sure. But so what happens now if they drive down the field and then score a touchdown and go for a 2-point conversion, they end the game right there? Like, it then becomes an unfair advantage if you lose the coin toss. Or let's say you win and maybe you defer. Maybe you do kick off first because you want to give them the football first, anticipating that they may score. And if they do score, then you know how many points you need to score in order to win. Very similar to the college football way of doing it because – you know, again, whoever gets the ball first there, the team, you know, gets to basically wait and see how their defense performed in the red zone.
Sure.
And then they get to determine how aggressive they want to be on offense in order to score and try to win the game. So no matter how you end up cutting it, like it's never going to be equitable to both sides and straight down the middle. So I think you've got a system now that works. It's not that often that, you know, you end up seeing a team get the coin toss, drive right down the field and score a touchdown. I know it obviously ended up impacting the AFC Championship game, but the NFC Championship game would be an example of that not working out. So I don't think it needs to be changed. I actually, if you're going to change the overtime rules at any point in time in the NFL season, do it in the regular season. Stop dealing with ties and stop hiding behind this veil of it being about player safety. Like, that is it's so stupid. It doesn't matter. I don't know why they keep saying that. Players would want to play until they win the game. No one wants to come off that field with a tie, regardless of how tired they are, how banged up they are. These players, it's the NFL. This is the ultimate league of competitiveness between players who want to figure out who wins, who loses. And I hate how that then factors into the end of the season in this odd variable of ways and looking at win-loss records, et cetera. So that's the only change I would really like to see, is just making it so you find a winner in the regular season too, and you play as long as you need to until you find that winner.
Yeah, I know. It's like, hey, we can't have these guys playing an extra 15 minutes. Player safety. Oh, by the way, you're scheduled for next Thursday, so if you could go ahead and hop onto Fox, hop on and play in 4 days, that'd be great. Thanks. I mean, like,
Think about this. Like, you tell me, where's there more parity? Is it in the regular season or the postseason? Right, as far as teams that are more evenly matched, and most likely, if they do go to overtime, probably going to take that game into additional minutes, right?
Right.
Probably in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Because those teams are the best of the best, right? And so now you're talking about players who played a 16-game schedule, who now played even more games going into the postseason, and you're talking about player safety. Like, you don't think they're banged up and just trying to make it through the season at this point in time and make it through this game, depending on how banged up they are? Like, it's just the logic behind it and trying to use player safety as the veil in order to make that change in the first place to cut it down to 10 minutes never made any sense to me in the first place.
All right, well, let me ask you this. On the Andy Reid thing and on trying to win games, were you surprised that Andy Reid did not take a shot into the end zone, a second shot into the end zone with 11 seconds left? Or did you like the idea that he said, okay, you know what? If we lose it here, it's just the most crippling thing in the world. I'm just going to take the field goal and try to get to overtime. What did you think about that decision there?
Yeah, I think the risk reward, the risk far outweighed the reward of trying to throw it in the end zone. Because again, if you would have told Andy Reid before the game, hey, you're going to be tied, obviously going into overtime side, and with a chance to have a coin toss to get the ball and go win the game, would you take those odds of winning at home? He probably would have said, yeah, I'll take that. And, unfortunately, it didn't work out. They lost the coin toss. New England drives down the field. They can't stop him on multiple third and longs. And the rest is history. So I think he would have taken those odds. For everyone who wants him to take a shot, it's like, yeah, that's great. Until you've got a quarterback who likes to extend plays, who has a history of potentially throwing into some traffic or even though as much as he makes plays, you also don't want him to make that mistake that loses you the game in that moment. That's typically how New England, that's why they've been so successful. They get teams to make that decision. They capitalize off that mistake, and you lost the game more so than they won the game. So, it didn't really equate to the reward for the risk. I just think it's a low percentage chance of you getting in. The chance of, I don't know, maybe a bad shotgun snap, a sack or a strip sack, something that ends the game in that moment. Was probably greater or more likely than you making a play to go win the football game in that instance.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. I mean, you have a 50% chance of winning in overtime if you get the, 50% chance of getting the ball anyway and feeling like you're going to win. I feel like if the Chiefs had gotten the ball in overtime, they're scoring a touchdown. Felt like whoever won the coin toss was going to come away with the W.
Was going to win the game.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But,
But I felt that way about the NFC Championship game too.
That ended up
not being the case.
Well, but the NFC Championship game is a great, like, that's what's so weird about this overtime debate is that people are like, this is garbage. You have to change overtime. You can't let not everybody. It's like, well, you just saw it work in the NFC. Like, it just worked fine. Like,
right.
Like the Rams made it play. Yeah.
And there's also the decision by Sean McVay to kick a field goal from where he did, because it was, a 57-yarder?
Yeah.
Like, if you miss that,
it's over.
And you give the ball back to Drew Brees, like, it's probably over from where they made that attempt from. So I do think there's some strategy to it, too, in even when you decide to go for that game-winning field goal. Because if you miss, man, and you give a future Hall of Famer like that, 20 yards for them to have an attempt at home, it just, again, I think it's – it's not broke. We don't need to fix it. I don't know why we tend to overreact. I mean, what happened in the NFC Championship game and the reaction to that, I think is warranted, but that's a whole other story.
And by the way, I believe on that first and 10 from, It was either the first and 10 or the second and 13. Either way, Jared Goff was throwing to Tyler Higbee. But it's like the Saints almost sacked him. And if he doesn't get that ball out, they're not kicking a field goal. They're punting. And the Saints are going to get another shot. I mean, that worked the way overtime is supposed to work. If you can go get a stop. And plus, the Chiefs, Andy Reid could have called timeout. He didn't. And as a result, Bob Sutton is fired. What direction do you think they go, Brady, when it comes to the Kansas City defensive coordinator? And was it smart to move on from Bob Sutton, who's been there since Andy Reid got there in 2013?
Yeah, it's crazy to think that drive in overtime may have just did in Bob Sutton, because let's just play out the scenario that the Chiefs win that game.
Sure.
You know, and it's not like they had like a great defensive performance. I mean, they were bad this year. They were 31st in yards. They were 24th in points. They were in the bottom, you know,
dead last against the run. Yeah.
Yeah. But in like every single category, with the exception of two, in which they were the top 10 in the regular season. Sacks, they were tied for first, and turnovers, they're eighth, which, you know, with that offense, that'll win you a lot of football games, and it did for Kansas City. But unfortunately, versus the best teams, that's a terrible formula, because then teams can really control the game by running the football, moving the sticks, keeping your offense off the field, and, you know, basically how that game played out in the AFC Championship game.
So, and by the way, this just occurred to me. I'm sorry, I just want to point this out, because I like to realize it when I'm an idiot. I was like, oh, this is how the Colts are going to beat the Chiefs. This is how it's going to happen. They're going to run the ball and control the clock and keep, and then I was like, all right, well, that didn't happen. The Chiefs are just going to murder everybody. And instead, the Patriots did the exact same thing. And I just want to note that I'm an idiot for not recognizing that the Patriots, with their power run game, could do the exact same thing, but better, of what the Colts were going to do. Thank you for letting me point out that I'm stupid.
No, it's fine. Like, I think we're all idiots in that respect too. I mean, I thought the exact same thing with Andrew Luck and the Colts. The difference was the New England was a better, you know, better able to execute it. I think their defense really was the thing that stood out to me. I mean, for the large part of that game, they took away Tyreek Hill. They limited a lot of the explosiveness, and that was the thing that stood out to me, is they were able to execute that game plan better than the Colts defense could. And by the way, just to cap off the overtime conversation, look, we're always talking, like, when we went, oh, each team needs to have a possession. Well, no, they don't. Like, you need to value defense. You need to value special teams. And in this instance, the Chiefs defense couldn't get off the field. Like, bottom line, they're not a complete team. They're not a good enough team to be playing for the Super Bowl. That's why we play these games. That's why the rules are in place the way they are. And I know everyone threw up to the stat of, you know, teams will win the coin toss and the NFL win like 52% of the time. And in college football, teams that win the coin toss win like closer to 55% of the time. So if you're looking at it from a fairness standpoint, and you're trying to use the college football system as a reason to say, oh, this is what the NFL should do, so each team can touch the football once, well, it's not as equal or fair in that case. The coin toss actually tends to determine the winner more so in the college than the NFL. But back to the D.C. conversation for Kansas City, for KC, because it's tough, man. Like, you're this team that's on the cusp of being able to make it to a Super Bowl, maybe win a Super Bowl. And the one thing holding you back is your defense. It was glaringly obvious. I think Andy Reid wanted to make a move before. I spoke to Adam Teicher too this past week, and he was saying like they really wanted to before the season this past year. But, you know, they were already changing quarterback, which they felt like was a pretty big change in itself. And they didn't want to make a whole lot of wholesale changes with everything going on. So, you know, they just basically said, let's see how things pan out this next year. You know, not having Eric Berry there, I think, hurt them a little bit in the back end with just the communication, their ability to match up the same way. But bottom line, they got worse from a year ago. And I think because of that, they had to move on, regardless of how that drive went. You know, because you could play out the scenario of, you know, let's say Kansas City wins the AFC Championship, they go win the Super Bowl. How do you fire Bob Sutton? Mm-hmm. Well, you fire Bob Sutton because you look at the body of work. And if you're Andy Reid, you say, I want to be standing up here again holding a Lombardi trophy. So if that's the case, like, I can't have a defense that's going to perform this way and hope that they get better next year. I got to do something. So my short list, I got four names, three are legit. One's just kind of fun to speculate about. The first is hire from within. You've got a guy, Mike Smith, who was assistant on the defensive line in 2017. They elevated to outside linebacker coach in 2018. The players love him. Dee Ford had a huge year this year. Justin Houston looked more back to form this year. Under his tutelage, the players talk about how prepared he is, how much they love playing for him. So he could be a guy that they could hire from within. Andy Reid likes to do that. And he does have some coordinating experience. You go back to his time as a co-defensive coordinator at Texas Tech. He has had to run a defense before, but that didn't quite work out. Not saying that it means it won't this time. You know how I feel about that, but there's a chance that they could hire from within if that's the case. Steve Spagnuolo would be an interesting one. A lot of credibility within the NFL, longtime defensive mind, former head coach, former defensive coordinator, who's been successful in particular at bringing in that NASCAR package for the New York Giants, putting all four defensive ends in
Brady,
the game at once, putting a lot of pressure on Tom Brady.
Yeah, I was going to say, Brady, I don't know if you know this or not, Steve Spagnuolo helped defeat the New England Patriots. Any chance that's just a gut reaction to like, all right, we lost. We can't beat the stinking Patriots. Let's go hire the one guy who beat them, Spags.
Yeah, you know, I don't know, because their personnel is different. And, you know, the difference with him is he runs a 4-3 scheme. And Kansas City currently right now is 3-4 personnel. They're running a 3-4 scheme. Now, it's not as drastic of a change as people think. And the reason why I say that is in most three wide receiver sets, if you are a defense, you are going to align in a four down front. And the reason being is it's how you want to go about trying to assign a player for each gap. And you don't usually do that with a three-man front. If you do, you've usually got a fourth linebacker who's on an edge somewhere, or you're crashing an inside linebacker to create that fourth guy in the rush. And so that's why it's not that, that's more of like a college perspective, because pretty much everyone in the NFL, when teams go to three wide receiver sets, they go to their sub personnel and they take out the nose guard, they put on an extra DB, and they go to a four down front. So it's not as big of a change as people think, because so many teams play three wide receiver sets, which basically means you're going to be playing a four down front anyway. So I don't look at that as that being that difficult of a transition. He's a good defensive mind. It would make sense. And he did coach under Andy Reid as a position coach back when he was at the Philadelphia Eagles. So that could make some sense. Another fun one's Chris Hewitt. Their weakest link was their secondary. Chris Hewitt's the secondary coach for the Baltimore Ravens. They've been arguably the best secondary over the last 3 years. And, you know, he's been coaching under Don Martindale, who's very aggressive, loves to bring pressure. That could maybe make a little bit of sense, too, if Chris Hewitt came in to take over to help improve the secondary, but just also improve the outcome of, you know, maybe mixing up some of the pressures and blitzes, unlike what the Chiefs did towards the end of that game and in overtime. And the last one, Sexy Rexy. Yeah, there might be a foot fetish there, but look, he's proven as a defensive mind. He's a good, you know, has been a head coach before, brings that kind of spirit to you. And sometimes I think when you've got a high-potent, high-powered offense, to counter that, you kind of need a defense that's the same, in my mind at least, that one that takes risks and takes, you know, gambles and is going to bring pressure from time to time. And obviously Rex could do that. So, you know, I don't know how legit that is. You know, Adam Schefter threw it out there, and obviously he's a colleague of Rex Ryan right now at ESPN. So that's probably more the case than anything else. But that's kind of my four names on the short list.
I want to ask you about the 3-4-4-3 thing, because the Panthers are also talking about making a shift to a 3-4, which is interesting. You know, Ron Rivera ran a 3-4 in San Diego with the Chargers, but I always thought that was just basically a byproduct of Wade Phillips having the 3-4 there and then leaving to coach the Cowboys and Ron sort of taking it over. He didn't take it right over after there was a space in between, but, like how much of an impact do you think that has on a team's offseason switching that package in terms of, you know, can you look at the Chiefs and actually see Kansas City operating out of a 4-3 or are they in nickel so much, as you pointed out a minute ago, that it doesn't really matter and you can kind of draft and sign guys? Like, to me, it's a little weird to like, all right, our defense sucks. Let's totally change the way we approach it and go to a different like formation. And I mean, I don't know, if you have a bunch of 3-4 outside linebackers, you can't just shift to a 4-3, right?
No, it's not that easy, but I mean, a guy like Justin Houston is basically an end. Now, Dee Ford, who's in the last year of his deal, they'll probably end up franchising him if they can't work out a long-term deal. He'd be a little bit undersized. And when you're concerned about that is, you know, when teams are a 3-4 team and they go to a four down front and you're an offense, you know, you kind of look at your chops because you say, all right, I got a tackle on a guy who's somewhere in the ballpark of 245 to 265 in today's game. And I've got a 300-pound tackle, right? That additional 40 to 60 pounds wins that battle as long as he plays with good technique, can move well enough, and put himself in the right position. So you end up then attacking that player because he's undersized and you feel like you can win that battle even though you're in sub personnel or through wide receiver sets. So the difficulty is this: it's hard in a year's time to A, teach the technique to those guys if they've never used it when they are in a 3-4 front, your base 3-4 front, because your defensive ends are your those five techniques and really your nose, like those guys are two gappers. So they've got to be responsible for, holding up the offensive line from getting to the second level. And they kind of have to play with a different technique. They have different prerogatives that come along with that. So it makes it more difficult than you think. Now, there are some schemes that will claim they're a 3-4 team, but they play four down fronts. So they might have 3-4 personnel. And maybe their nose is still a guy who two gaps from time to time, but they're playing a four down front, they're playing an under front basically, and they're one gap penetrators. So there's all kinds of variations. To be honest with you, whether it's 3-4, 4-3, whatever you want to call it, you've got to be able to be flexible. You have to be able to adjust. You have to be able to change that picture that the O line and the quarterback are seeing, and that the other coaching staff seeing. So it forces them to have to deal with more. I mean, the reason why 3-4 is harder, it's easier to run against. Because if you think about a base 3-4, neither guard is covered.
That makes sense.
So
yeah.
You should be able to have those guys climb up on the second level and work up on the linebackers. Now, it might be harder to get to the edges at times because of the configuration, but running in between the tackles, you should be able to get that done. The reason why 3-4 became more difficult for quarterbacks to deal with is because if you look at the configuration of it, it's harder for protection. Like if you're a quarterback, you're looking out there, you're like, all right, I got three down linemen and then two guys on the edges. Like there's five possible guys that could rush right now. I don't know who's coming, who's not. And there's more of these guys who are like in these 40s and 50 numbers kind of walking around. I'm not sure if they're dropping the coverage or blitzing or what the case is. So it makes it more difficult. And that's why like the 3-4, a lot of quarterbacks don't like it. It's harder and it stresses the protection a little bit more. And, it makes your offensive line, it kind of splits it. Because typically, if you have a three down front, you're going to have, especially if it's like, let's just say it's a five-man protection, you're an empty. If you've got your center covered up and both tackles, both of those guards are going to be dueling, meaning they're looking at the player inside the box to their right or to their left, to the outside. And then they go look to help and then go look for other work. So you're kind of splitting your offensive lineup when that's the case. And then you could give a bunch of different variations in what you – look like. Because if you think about it, if you only have three guys who are down and there's going to be a fourth or a fifth rusher, you just don't know where that rusher's coming from.
Right.
Like it could be from the edge. It could be the interior guys. If it's a bunch of DBs and like a nickel or dime package, it could be coming from anywhere. So it just creates more deception for the defense and it stresses the center and the quarterback from figuring out where they're protected and where they're not. So the thing with Kansas City is they don't have that issue. They don't have issue getting pressure. They got a lot of pressure this past year with the personnel that they have. So regardless of what they go to, I don't know that they're going to feel it's necessary to bring a bunch of pressure, maybe more timely. I just think they need to change up their coverages and change up what they're doing to be more effective and not allowing so many big plays in the passing game.
Well, all right, so but thinking about what you're saying about the pressure stuff too, it seemed like the Patriots had a pretty perfect game plan for that pressure. I mean, they basically said, all right, that's fine. We're going to leave Gronk in. We got six offensive linemen now, with him blocking like that, ostensibly. And we're going to have James White or whoever, Rex Burkhead, whoever it is, chipping on the other edge and basically double teaming Justin Houston and Dee Ford. And Tom Brady had tons of time in clean pockets in third down, right?
Yeah, and that's part of it. Like, if you go look at that final drive, it was something that they did a little bit throughout the course of the game. That's why, everyone's excited about Tony Romo predicting stuff. But to be honest with you, if you were watching closely, of the 19, there were 13 of 19 on third down. 12 of those 19 attempts were passes, and then 9 of them were targeted for Julian Edelman and Rob Gronkowski. So you kind of had a pretty good idea of where the ball was going to, and they ran that play on 3rd and 9 to Edelman from the left. They ran the exact same play. They just flipped it, and then they ran it from the right. So, based on the formation, based on the concern, because the pass rush did, it was a concern coming into it. Game plan, wise, if you're a one-dimensional team and you're going against Kansas City, you've got to use a running back. You've got to use your tackles to help, tight ends to help your tackles, because they can't help out your interior offensive lineman when you have a rusher like Chris Jones. So all that stuff was easy to see, easy to predict. And I think the frustration for Kansas City fans is, if Tony Romo's seen it, which is fine, and that's one thing as an analyst to talk about, but why aren't you bringing up the point of how do they stop it then? Yeah. Because that's the issue. They weren't bracketing Edelman. They weren't bracketing Rob Gronkowski. Instead, they were leaving them isolated, singled up in coverage. that's where I would be frustrated as a Kansas City fan is, you know, Bob Sutton didn't make any changes to be able to stop what the Patriots were doing, and they gave Tom Brady all day. Like, if you're going to bring pressure, bring the house, man. Bring an extra defender to force that football out quicker than Tom Brady wants to. If you're just going to play, you know, one-on-one coverage, man coverage anyway, what do you need the post safety for? And if you're not, and if you want to try to get a rush with your front four, then sit there and say, okay, we're going to make you hold on to it longer and give those guys more time by doubling those guys on the outside.
So, like, the worst thing you can do in that case, or so the worst thing you can do against a guy like Tom Brady is basically bring five guys or four guys. I mean, like, you bring five guys, so you're shorthanded on the back end, but if he doubles up on the protection and keeps Gronk in there and he recognizes it, and Tom Brady's been doing this for 20 freaking years, so he's gonna recognize it, just like Tony Romo recognized it, just like you recognize it. I'm not gonna point out that you know, Quinn, colon, Romo not a witch, just an average guy. But the, that's the headline for the podcast post story tomorrow. It's like,
that would fit in today's world of the news cycle as far as what gets thrown out there that's not accurate.
Yeah. Brady, but, you know, yeah, Brady it, Quinn, it, Brady it, Quinn.
It's the life we live.
Yeah, Brady Quinn calls Tony Romo average. That's how you get thrown off the Mercedes Pinto. But the, no, I think that you're right. Like, that's been the story of these playoffs is, to me, and this is the story of football, right? I mean, like, coaches are making adjustments. I was surprised, Brady, that, maybe you noticed it and I missed something here, but like Sean Payton got Alvin Kamara early in the first quarter and early in the third quarter isolated against linebackers like crazy and then sort of went away from it, felt like. And they tried to do other stuff instead of just like, if they're going to leave Corey Littleton on Alvin Kamara, just keep throwing it to Alvin Kamara. And then like Bob Sutton, you're getting gashed on third down by Julian Edelman, man. Double Julian Edelman. Put two guys on Julian Edelman. Just stop leaving him in single coverage. He's running right at the middle. He's wide open every time.
Yeah, or doing what Patriots did. Did you see the man-to-man coverage they were playing?
Yeah.
So it's typically man-to-man coverage, right? Everyone's one-on-one, and then they've got a post-size safety. It's going to be in the middle of the field, okay? Last line of defense, typically watching the quarterback's eyes and then going wherever he's looking. No, that is not what the Patriots did. They put that dude over Tyreek Hill. Now, maybe he might have started in the middle of the field, but as soon as the snap of the ball went, he was running to wherever Tyreek Hill was to give that player help to ensure that Tyreek Hill, besides one big play in that game, didn't ruin the game for the New England Patriots. Like, hey, Bob Sutton, just look what they're doing. Like, do what the Patriots are doing and make some sort of adjustment. But here's the thing is, Bob Sutton's a good defensive mind. He didn't forget how to coach. Paul Gunther, for example, who's out in Oakland, he's a good defensive coach. Sure. Look at him when he had personnel in Cincinnati. That's a good defense. And he got the most out of guys like Geno Atkins. But when you trade away a guy like, you know, Khalil Mack, like the Raiders did, and then they didn't bring back Autry as well in the interior, all of a sudden your defense looks pretty limited. And that's what it just goes to show you, as good as the pass rush was in Kansas City this year, they were very average in the back end as far as their personnel and talent. And Bob Sutton wasn't dealing with much, and I think he was doing the best he could to put together a game plan to help those guys out.
Well, look, the Patriots do what they do, and they took away Tyreek Hill, as you pointed out, and they took away the pass rush. So they took away the two biggest weapons on the both sides of the field. That's how the Patriots handle business. All right, let's take a quick break, and we'll come back and break down some other NFL stuff.
The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads ensure you can take on any adventure. Available H-Track all-wheel drives, you can take on the dirt trails and kick up some mud. Standard third-row seating so your whole family can experience the thrill together. Available dual wireless charging pads so no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead phone. Whether you're tailgating out in the dirt lot, Carter Finley, shout out Carter Finley, or whether you're whitewater rafting, taking the entire family on an adventurous trip, maybe you're out camping in Mount Rogers. I used to go as a kid, wish my parents had a Hyundai Santa Fe. The Hyundai Santa Fe is perfect for your family outing. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Other NFL stuff. What a great segue into a commercial break that was for me. I didn't know what we were going to talk about. Do we want to talk about the Senior Bowl? Do you want to?
Well, we were going to talk about dude wipes. Because remember we like had this conversation before because we both had to go, you know, take a deuce before we were going to record. And I was like, we didn't really get into the conversation of dude wipes, but I'll put it this way: I don't know why it's not like better known and not like more guys don't do it. I feel like honestly. Like, we have gum, we have mints. Like, it's a breath mint for your ass. That's what, like, wiping with a dude wipe or wet wipes essentially is. Like, I have two daughters.
Sure.
One that's 2.5.
Why do we stop using wipes at a young age?
Why do we stop?
Yeah. What are we doing here?
It doesn't make any sense. And, like, it was reintroduced to me by a teammate at Notre Dame when, like, he had some, like, wet wipes in his locker. I was like, hey, man, what do you use that for? He's like, what do you mean?
Like, my butt.
Well, I mean, I was like, do you have some other use besides using when you go to the bathroom? He said, no, that's what they're for. I'm like, huh. And I was like, all right, well, like, kind of makes sense. And then, like, we had this long, dry conversation of why do we ever stop using them if you use them for babies and all that? Like, he was like, have you ever tried using them as an adult? I was like, no. And yeah. So I went out, picked some up. Next time I had to go, used it, and I was like, wow, I feel cleaner. Like, I feel like I have more confidence. Like, I can kind of roam around, and I feel like I've got a little swagger to me because of the wipes. And like, another thing is, I feel like you can get away with, like, one or two farts where it doesn't even smell. It's like a third one until really it starts to smell again, purely because of how clean you are with the wipes.
I love that people are like, wait, where did this conversation come from? Brady mentioned before, like, what were these guys doing before the podcast started? What on? But I'm with you 100%. Once my son, you know, we see like these wipes are hanging around. You're like, all right, you know, I'll take a spin. You're like, oh my God, what have I been doing my entire life using this trash paper? Like big toilet paper has gotten a hold of this country and is trying to stay in business with their cheap single ply paper that ruins your tush. That's
how does single ply even exist? I mean, let's be honest. Everybody's had to use single ply. You know what you end up doing? You use double the amount of toilet paper, so you're essentially trying to get it to two ply. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's so crappy. You have to use literally like a brick of single ply to make it useful. Like, otherwise, you're basically wiping your butt with your bare hands. So I don't want to talk about single ply. I don't know why it exists though.
Yeah.
And then there's, you know, toilet paper, which look from an economical sense, it's fine to use for like the grunt work. But once you really need to just to kind of the finishing touch, you know, the whipped cream and the cherry on top, you got to go back to the dude wipe.
Yep, I'm with you. All right, so Dude Wipes, if you hear this, so people tweet at Dude Wipes and tell them we need a sponsorship from Dude Wipes, the Super Bowl podcast, the Pick Six podcast at the Super Bowl presented by Dude
Wipes. By the way, Pete Prisco needs them more than anyone else because he's the most full of shit. So he's going to need those Dude Wipes more than anyone else.
I'm glad that I now have to go back and bleep that out, but it's going to be funny. I don't mind. I'll bleep anything.
I thought we were allowed to cuss in this podcast. Is that not true?
I don't think so. The F word is definitely not allowed. Ass is allowed, but that's like, you can just say ass now. Ass is just common vernacular. D, I don't think we're allowed to do that. And S, I don't think, but I will err on the side of caution so as not to get either of us thrown off the Mercedes-Benz dome.
It was like at the 40-minute mark, so there you go.
Oh, I take notes during the podcast. Don't you worry. Listen to everyone back over again. I'm a professional. Okay, so the Senior Bowl is happening right now. Actually, you know what? No, do you want to talk about the Senior Bowl or you want to talk about the matchup between the Patriots and Rams? Let's talk about the Patriots and Rams.
Let's talk Senior Bowl quick. So a couple things. Like, I was asked today, hey, so like the Bengals haven't hired Zach Taylor yet or they can't assemble a staff. And Brian Flores is obviously still the defensive coordinator for the Patriots, so he can't take the Miami job. And someone said, are they behind the other teams and not being able to be down there in Mobile to evaluate the talent and all that. I said, well, I mean, think about it. The Patriots have been playing the Super Bowl the last 3 years, so Bill Belichick isn't down there either. Neither is the other team in the Super Bowl. So the Eagles last year, obviously the Rams this year, and not even the Pro Bowl coaching staffs, right? Like Dallas and the Chargers aren't down there evaluating them because the coach of the Pro Bowl. So it's not that big of a deal, at least not for the coaching staffs. They're typically not as involved unless they're the teams coaching them, Oakland and San Francisco, which, you know, no one's going to get the type of perspective and understanding of the players they're working with besides those two staffs. But it does hurt as far as the direction of the scouts, because Zach Taylor and Brian Flores might say, this is what I'm looking for out of these players. This is what I want you to go do. Or even if they're assembling their assistants or their scouting department, there's some of these guys they may have to hang on to until after the draft. And that's where you tend to see more turnover at the scouting department. So that was just kind of one thing that I thought was interesting. Someone brought up today and I was like, all right, you know, I don't think it impacts it as much as a lot of people out there think. And the other thing you have to always keep in mind is we're making a big deal with the Senior Bowl because it's the right here and now, but free agency comes first. So the first thing really Zach Taylor and Brian Flores are going to be addressing is their own team, their own vision for what they see moving forward, what type of players they're looking for at each position, and then identifying and going through and making sure they're on the same page with the scouting department and coaching staff for free agency. And then they can start their evaluation for their, you know, college prospects. So it's not as big of a deal as a lot of people think.
Yeah. And plus, the Senior Bowl matters, but you can go back and watch the tape. Like you can go back and watch the tape, and you're going to get to see these guys at the combine and interview these guys. So, you know, you want to go get that Super Bowl ring first and foremost before, you know, if you're Brian Flores. Like remember Matt Patricia's defense? It's like, oh, you know, like, oh, is Matt Patricia behind? He'd be fine. He's with the Patriots. And then he goes out and gives up like 9,000 yards to Nick Foles. It's like, oh God, have we made a mistake? You know, like what you want to do is focus on the Super Bowl, do well in the Super Bowl. That way people aren't panicked about your poor performance in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, exactly. And you got both these coaches, both Zach Taylor, quarterback coach for the Rams, and then obviously Brian Flores, who are preparing for it. So that's all that matters now. And I think, if you're looking at each organization, they're fine. They've got scouting departments who are, sitting there now in Mobile, looking at their prospects, looking at some of these guys and getting basic, you know, general evaluations of them. So when these coaches do take over the job and assemble their staff, they can then talk about which guys are a fit, which guys aren't, with the scheme that they want to run.
Yeah. All right. So on the Super Bowl, when you look at this matchup, because I feel like going into the weekend, this is the last podcast of the weekend, people will be downloaded on Saturday and Sunday, you know, thinking about this game. We don't want to get too far, you know, we still want to keep the vibes of the Rams and Patriots. What stands out to you as the most important matchup, or like, I don't know, not biggest X factor, but like, you know, is it, you know, Wade Phillips versus Tom Brady? What pops in your mind when you think about this matchup?
Well, it's going to be the O-line for the Patriots versus the D-line for the Rams. If the Patriots' offensive line can continually do what they've done this playoffs, keep Tom Brady comfortable in the pocket, keep him upright, not allow Donald and Sue and Dante Fowler and Brockers to just ransack this game, get a bunch of pressure on Brady, a bunch of hits, you know, hurries, sacks, all that good stuff, I think New England wins. I trust Tom Brady, Edelman, Gronk, James White, Chris Hogan, Dorsett, all those guys, you know, doing their part and executing at a higher level. So that's I think, where it starts and really ends for me as far as how this game will go or largely be dictated.
So would you say the game will be won in the trenches is what you're saying?
Yes, which is not fun for people on the outside because, you know, no one cares about that stuff. Well, but I do.
Well, and no. I think people care. Go ahead.
The next thing that no one else cares about that's going to matter is kicking. Like, Greg Zuerlein helped get the Rams to the Super Bowl because of some clutch kicks. He's going to probably have to have a kick to win the game in this game if the Rams want to win, and same could be said for Gostkowski. So the kicking game is going to be huge, especially teams in general, that kind of field position battle. And then how aggressive, you know, Sean McVay could potentially be again with special teams if the Rams are behind, or how aggressive Bill Belichick would potentially be with special teams, or just going for it on fourth down and not going to a special team, depending on the scenario. Because, again, the fourth down fake by Hecker to Sam Shields in the NFC Championship game largely sparked that comeback by the Rams to win it. So special teams, to me, is going to be the thing that no one talks about. It's going to be huge, kicking in particular. And I just want to say this one last thing. Johnny Hecker does not get enough credit for the special teams play that he made in the NFC Championship game. And it wasn't the pass on fourth down to continue that drive. It was the hold on the game-winning kick. It was a great hold. It's the most thankless job that there is in professional sports. People think that's the kicker because they're like, well, when he makes it, everyone's like, oh, he did his job. Not true, because everyone's crediting Greg Zuerlein making a clutch kick. And when he misses, he gets all the blame. Think about a holder. If a holder messes up holding the football, no matter what, everyone hates him for the rest of his life.
Tony,
if the laces were in instead of out, it's the worst. Tony Romo.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
But if he does his job, no one's ever thanking him to say, hey, great hold. It was a great hold by Hecker on that last kick to help send him to the Super Bowl.
That's a great point. Yeah, it's like if you it's like when you make predictions before the season. If you make, you know, if you get the division right, the division winner right, it's like, hey, great job. Way to do your job. If you get it wrong, it's like,
no.
you clown, you know nothing. You are a loser who knows nothing.
No, you know what else it is? It's like Uber drivers and then the delivery people, like Uber Eats when they deliver it. It's like someone who is delivering your food, you only get on them when they forget something or the order's wrong and they picked it up and they didn't look at the receipt.
Yeah.
Like, you only get upset with them. You never walk away being like, you know what, that was a great delivery. Like, it was awesome how they got extra condiments and they had all the utensils and everything that I needed. Or like when a guy, like, they pick you up, they get you to point A, point B. Like, we're never appreciative of, like, getting there safely. You know what I'm saying? Like, we look at them and like, well, yeah, of course you shouldn't get an accident. You've got like a map, you know, Google Maps, like, telling you where to go, or Waze telling you where to go to get there. So, like, how could you mess it up?
No.
But again, much like the Uber Eats people who deliver their, us or the food, that's like what a holder is in the NFL.
No days off. Okay, so do you find it amazing? Because, you know, just glancing at your Wikipedia page, because I don't have this memorized, but I know how roughly old you are. And I know when I was watching the page, like, you were playing high school football when Tom Brady won his first Super Bowl. You were a superstar at Notre Dame, a first round draft pick in the NFL, and had a pretty long career by NFL standards. And Tom Brady still went, like, playing in Super Bowls. How freaking insane is that?
It's nuts. And it's why, in my opinion, he's the greatest of all time, for how well he's playing at this point at 41 years old, still at, you know, playing at a really, really high level, still going to Super Bowls. Like, someone was saying the other day, like, how there was that 10-year gap where they didn't win one.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, what are people going to say about that? How can you consider him a dynasty? Like, hey, dude, they went to 2 Super Bowls in that time. Like,
yeah.
It's hard to get to a Super Bowl. It's hard to win a Super Bowl. Like, so to sit there and say, well, they had a 10-year gap. Well, yeah. Didn't they go 18-1 or whatever it was this season
when
they went undefeated 16-0?
Yeah.
Like, are we all of a sudden not going to consider that as part of it, even though they win the Super Bowl that year? This team is a dynasty. Tom Brady's ridiculous. He's the greatest of all time. We'll never, and I will say this again, we will never see a quarterback and head coach be as successful in the NFL as we've seen from the New England Patriots. We won't see this again. We won't see 9 Super Bowl appearances in, what is it, 18 or 19 seasons.
18.
We won't see a team dominate a division like they have or go to the AFC Championship game as much as they have. Like, we'll never see this again. Like, people need to start appreciating this because it will never be replicated. We'll look back on this and think, man, that was ridiculous when you consider free agency, the way the draft set up, the salary cap, like all the things that basically force parity in the NFL. And yet the New England Patriots still dominate, and it's just remarkable.
I'll go so far as to say that we will never see this in sports again. I don't think you will ever see this, because the NBA has gotten to the point where no player is going to stick around on one team for, you know, the way that Michael Jordan did. I mean, if LeBron James is bouncing around, everybody's bouncing around, all right? I mean, Kevin.
Yeah, but what would it be for Golden State? Like, if Golden State wins this year, what is that? It would be 3 and 4 years?
Yeah,
like,
a.k.a. You know, it would be 3 and 4 years, a.k.a. the first 4 years of Tom Brady and Bill Belichick. Like, three.
Right, but then let's see, like, how they continue from there. Because, you know, like, they could be on that sort of run. And you're right. Like, it's hard to replicate in other sports leagues, too, because of how things are set up and the way, you know, free agency works out for them as well. But still, it's crazy to think that, at least in football, I mean, we'll never see anything like this again. I mean,
yeah.
He's been to more Super Bowls himself, Tom Brady has, than every other NFL team besides his own who's been to 11. He's been to 9.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
9 Super Bowls. This is my 9th, and I said it wrong the other day, but this is my 9th, and this will be the 5th time that I've covered. So like, I've been covering the NFL for CBS for almost a full decade, which is insane. And Tom Brady's been to half of the Super Bowls that I have. Like, it's mind-boggling that he has been involved in half of the Super Bowls.
I mean, the average lifespan of an NFL player is 3 years. 3 years. Yeah. He's gone to 3 times as many Super Bowls. Like, it's absurd when you think about how hard it is to make it into the NFL, to make it as an NFL player. Like, you're talking about people who played high school football, and there's a lot of people maybe who listen that went out there and played high school but never made it to college, never could make it to the professional level. Like, he is so far surpassed it, and everyone's going to bring up the 6th-round grade or all that, or 6th-round draft pick and all that. But, I mean, even coming out of high school, like, you're a fraction of a percent to be able to then go and make it to the NFL and play more than 3 years. Like, a fraction of a percent to be able to do that. And not only has he done that, he's literally achieved, like, at the highest level, the greatest accomplishment that you could. And he's done it, what, 5 times? Mm-hmm. And now he's going back to a 9th Super Bowl?
Do you think he retires if they win this one?
I don't know, man. I mean, it'd be a great way to go out, but I just get the sense that, and this kind of goes back, and again, this wasn't a knock at Seth Wickersham, it's just like, you wrote a story about how this was becoming the demise of the team and blah, 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 and literally they've gone to a Super Bowl every single year since Player Rifle came out. So it's like absurd. But if he could keep the same schedule where he's able to spend the off seasons with his family and then still able to go out there and do this and play the way he has, like, I don't see why you would stop at this point. I mean, and then on paper, this team isn't that talented. I mean, they could continue to make additions to this team and actually help him out and give him more help, and be able to make it back. You know, if you look at the AFC East, I mean, I think Buffalo will be better. The Jets will probably be better with their quarterback play and all that. Who knows what the Dolphins will be? But still, like, these are quarterbacks going in their second year. Like, they're not going to be that much better. Like, they should be able to win the AFC East. And if you look at the AFC, you know, picture, like, outside of maybe Pittsburgh, if they can get their act together, and obviously Kansas City, that's always going to be a contender now with the way Mahomes and Reed are, but, you know, I don't know that they're going to be able to replicate what they did this past year. It's like, you'd have to consider them as being a top, you know, they're in the top 3 teams every single year. So it's, yeah, why not? Why wouldn't he come back if they could do this again? He's 42 and he's feeling all right.
And look, by the way, Tom Brady is signed through 2019. His 42-year-old season next year, he signed through it, and he makes $27 million in 2019, $14 million in base salary, $7 million in signing bonus, an additional $5 million through restructure and $1 million through a roster bonus. So I understand that Tom Brady doesn't need $27 million because he's married to he and Giselle are multi-billionaires at this point. They have to be, right?
He's made a bunch in his life. That's part of it. But, yeah, she makes a ton, too.
Sure.
So even though $27 million, it's always tough to turn down. I mean, I can't remember the last time someone offered me that much money. But I mean, I'm sure that's tough to turn down. But
you know, we were looking at you probably didn't hear the podcast. Who was I talking to last week? But we were trying to like figure out like salaries, all time quarterback salaries, like who'd made the most, because it's like Eli, it's the Mannings and Drew Brees with Tom Coughlin as their agent. But you were on there. You were like a top. You're up there. I was pretty impressed.
Up there for what?
I mean, you were like on the list. Of most career earnings for quarterbacks.
I don't know how that's possible. Maybe my first year was pretty good. After that, I wasn't a
top. Hold on, let me check my bank account real quick.
I was going to wife who likes to spend money, so maybe they didn't deplete some of those assets.
Well, they don't count what's gone out since you. Yeah, they don't count that.
Yeah.
It's just what came in.
No, but that's one other conversation, because like Patrick Mahomes is going to probably make. Back.
Oh no, he was already. He's already passed you, I think. Just for you.
Well, yeah, easily. Well, just with being with like where he's taking number 10 overall, yep. And then beyond that, like when he gets his next deal, that's going to be ridiculous. And people are concerned about it handicapping the team. Like I was just talking to, I'm trying to think. We had a conversation with Rich McKay, president CEO of the Atlanta Falcons, and this kind of came up on a side conversation. But you know, if the cap keeps going up the way it is. it really doesn't handicap your team as much as you think. If you want to buy $10 million a year, or $12 million a year, whatever it is, you know, you're as a team, you're looking at saying like, oh, we could be cash strapped. We have no money. Oh, boom. There's $10 million, $12 million I've got to then spend all of a sudden because the salary cap increases. So at the rate it's going on, you'd have to think that if like you're a Chiefs fan, like you keep hearing, oh, Patrick Mahomes wants this $200 million deal, or they might sign him to one. Like, don't panic, because the salary cap at that point may be $200 million just for an individual season here in a couple of years with the way it's skyrocketing and continues to go up. So that's kind of a misnomer, at least in my mind, as far as like what we're compensating quarterbacks with. And then it handicapping a team's roster.
It does help though to have that quarterback on the rookie deal, which is pretty nice, because that rookie deal is dirt cheap. And it is interesting that, you know, you had, you know, what, how many of the four or five? Let's see, the Rams. Yes. Of course, they made it to the final. They were the final four, Chiefs, Patriots, and Saints didn't have it. It's interesting though, right? Like, the old and new, old versus new, like two teams that had the rookie quarterback deal and then two teams that had, the old veteran deal. Hilarious, I think, that the two teams in the Super Bowl both drafted a running back in the first round. That's a real story. Yeah,
they get flack for doing that. Pete Prisco in particular says they grow on trees. And maybe that's the case. Look, my thing is, I think drafting a quarterback in the first round, there's no issue with this, especially if you're going to use the guy and get all the wear and tear out of it for what you're paying him. It's, to me, it's paying a guy that then goes into free agency, like Mark Ingram. Free agent this year, right? So the Saints have to make a decision. If I'm Mark Ingram, like, I would probably take less to stay in New Orleans, because A, you don't have to, you know, carry all the wear and tear and take all the carries, because you've got Kamara there. And then B, you know you're going to be successful. You're still having chances to win a Super Bowl while Drew Brees and Sean Payton are there. And I don't know what the market's going to be. Like, if you look at some of the older running backs, like, yes, Adrian Peterson had a resurgence, but, you know, when you look at a guy like Philip Lindsay, who's an undrafted college free agent that comes in and makes the Pro Bowl as a rookie, it doesn't make a good case for you. So why would people want to invest a ton of money into it? So that's a whole separate conversation for another time. But I find it interesting that not only one, you know, people making the case for why you shouldn't draft in the first round, but these are two examples why you can, and you can still be successful. And it doesn't necessarily mean you have to sign this guy to some huge deal on a second deal or have to sign him at all. You can just go back to the draft and get another one.
That's right. All right. You got stuff to do. I got stuff to do. Got to get out of here. We got to get down to Atlanta.
I'm getting some more dude wipes. Don't forget to bring yours, by the way. Don't forget to bring your dude wipes down to Atlanta.
I will bring, can I just bring like some, what are the kids wipes? I might just bring the Pampers kids wipes. I mean, that's Pampers for like.
Well, you better make sure they're flushable though. Otherwise we could have a real, situation on our hands.
We had an explosion in Raleigh recently, like up north of my house. It was like the sewer busted because of too many wipes. Maybe don't write flushable wipes on it. And now there's a truck that like the Raleigh, the city sewage truck that rolls around that like says like, do not flush wipes. So there you go.
Are they not flushable though? I don't get it. Like, don't they make them where it's like a biodegradable material though? Or is that not the case?
I think they're lying. It's like the fat free yogurt in Seinfeld. You know, it's like, it's fat free yogurt. Don't worry about it. Just eat it away.
Well, it is technically fat free, but it just has a lot of other stuff, like a ton of sugar.
Right. But it's like wheat thins. It's like, oh, they're thin. How great. That's great for it. You know, it's like thin, like thin crisp. It's like, oh, they're thin. Well, that's fine. It's like, no, it doesn't matter. They're just a smaller, you're just eating slightly less because you're slightly thinner. All right, let's get the hell out of here. We'll talk in Atlanta. We'll hang out. You go down Sunday?
Monday. I'm going to do radio Sunday night.
Okay. Well, I will see you all Monday. Brady Quinn, travel safe. Follow him on Twitter at 3RD_goal. Watch him on CBS Sports HQ. We'll talk to you soon, buddy.
Sounds good, brother.